Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Hopefully by this time in our homes, the tree is up, the lights are on, any other greenery we have. Some of it may have been done today. Some of it may have been done a couple weeks ago. People have different patterns of getting their house ready. But one of the things that I'm sure is in a lot of our homes as well is a manger scene, much like this manger scene we have here at church tonight, sometimes referred to as a creche or a nativity scene. There's different words for it. We tend to call it a manger scene. In our house, we put our manger scene on top of our piano. These are figures that I was able to bring back from a trip I made years ago to Bethlehem. And I purchased these wooden figures in Bethlehem, and we use them to this day on Christmas. And so we have them on top of our piano. A few years back, we were decorating the house, and we're getting down to the end, and not everything was out yet, but most of the things were done. And my daughters, who were very young then, one of them said to me, "Wait a minute, where are the God people? We haven't set up the God people yet." And to this day, we refer to the figures in the manger scene as the God people. We have a box that we store in the attic, and we've written on it, "The God people." And it becomes known as that. So when our God people, when the manger scene is set up, what's interesting is it's on our piano. And my daughters, when they were younger, were involved in music and playing in orchestras and things, and they would get these little statuettes, little head, kind of the bust of great composers. And I think we have, I always get these mixed up what we really have, but I think we have Bach, Beethoven, and Mozart sitting there on the piano. So when we put our nativity scene up, we just move them out of the way till we get everything done, then we put them back in the midst of the nativity scene. And they tend to be at the part where the wise men are. You know how when you set up a nativity scene, the wise men are always off to the side? Well, we have what's traditionally in manger scenes, three wise men, and then we have Bach, Beethoven, and Mozart. And at some point in Epiphany, they all show up at the manger, and we got Bach, Beethoven, and Mozart looking in as well. They're wise men. They're wise men like others. You know, I told that, shared that thought earlier, one of the earlier services, and people are coming out of the narthex sharing many things that they were in their mangers that are traditions in their families. They may not be the most theological things, but there's traditions. There's mythical kind of explanations for why these things are part of our life. I'd like to talk a little bit about, though, this manger scene that's here at church, or the one that's in your home. And it may be something that we presume has been around since just after Christ. But that's not the case. The manger scene actually comes from St. Francis of Assisi. You know St. Francis of Assisi? Heard of St. Francis of Assisi? He was around in the 1200s, and he actually is the one who introduced the manger idea, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. Francis was also somebody who, in his time, presented what could be called, and here's a phrase I'd like you to leave with tonight, an alternative orthodoxy. An alternative orthodoxy. You know, in our time, it's almost hard to hear that phrase, because when we think of something as being orthodox, the word orthodox means literally means, you know, right thinking. It's the right way. It's the correct way. It's orthodox. And if it's not orthodox, what is it? It's unorthodox, or it's not orthodox. We live in a very dualistic world. You know, something is either the way we think. It's either orthodox or it's unorthodox. It's either right or it's wrong. It's left or it's right. It's the world we live in, unfortunately, in my opinion. And I think we see the repercussions of that nationwide, this divisiveness. Either or, left, right. Centuries ago, I believe the world was much more able to encompass a bigger picture, to handle a much bigger sense of things. And I think what we need to be called to is that, again, that sense of a wisdom and a bigger mind that can handle things. That's not a dualistic way of thinking, but ways we can bring things together. And so Francis was someone who presented actually an ancient alternative orthodoxy in his time. Let me tell you what I mean by that. I'll tell you what this is. Here's what the most orthodox way of understanding the story of Christ is, and many of us think, I think it's the dominant way we think today. Tell me if this is familiar. God created all of creation, and humanity sinned. And ever since that time, there's been this separation. And God has not been too happy with humanity. And so God sent Jesus Christ into the world, and Jesus had to die on the cross, sacrifice himself, shed his blood, so that God would like us. That the shedding of blood, sacrifice, would bring about God's love for us. That idea almost that Jesus came here to change God's mind about us. Does that sound familiar? That's not an unusual way of explaining Jesus' life and our being redeemed through the blood of the cross. You hear phrases that we speak like that. And so our redemption is through the death of Jesus. Well, there was an alternative orthodoxy that Francis very much taught and lived. And it was more that went back to the story of creation. Remember the story of creation, the 7 days? And the emphasis was more on the goodness of creation. Remember, do you remember the story of creation? On day one, God created what he created. God created what was created on day one. And what did God say? It's good. Day two, created, and what did God say? It's good. Day three, God created and said, it's good. Day four, God created and said, it's good. Five, it's good. Then God created humanity, and what did God say at the end of that day? It is very good. It is very good. And so, for Francis and this alternative orthodoxy, the sense was more that Jesus the Christ was not sent into this world to kind of fix up something that got all messed up, but rather Jesus the Christ was meant to come into this world. That creation was the first expression of God. That creation was the first incarnation. That creation was the first expression of the Christ. And we believe that this wonder, this Christ has come into this child at Bethlehem. And for Francis, this Christ, this Jesus Christ, comes into our world to show us God's love for us, to show us how good we are, to show us the possibilities in our lives. For Francis, Jesus came into this world not to change God's mind about us, but to change our mind about God, and to know this great, incredible love that God has for us. And so Jesus lived that life, and yes, to live that kind of life, to bring about the goodness of creation, to bring about the care for folks, to reach out to those who are in poverty, to reach out to those who are oppressed, to reach out to where there is injustice, we have to suffer and give our lives for that. And yes, Jesus did that. Yes, Jesus did die on the cross. He died on the cross to live into this goodness that we're called to. And so to live into this goodness of creation, we're going to have to challenge the world sometimes and challenge creation. And yes, it can lead to suffering and death. But for Francis, redemption was not just something that happened on the cross. For Francis, redemption was something that began in this birth in Bethlehem, in this Christ coming among us. Do you hear the difference a little bit? And it's not heresy. It's not against Christian faith. Because what do we call Francis? Saint Francis. The church had the ability, the world had the ability, to handle a lot more than I think we do today. And I think that's something we can take back and try to live into in our lives. And so what Francis did was, in his ministry, St. Francis was someone who really felt called to care for the poor, to care for the oppressed, to care for the powerless, to care for those who had no voice. That was his, he felt that was the ministry of Jesus, and he felt called to live into that. And so he gathered folks around him, who became known as Franciscans, to live into that particular charism, that particular gift. And so the story is, in 1223, it was Christmas time, Christmas Eve, and there was going to be a celebration in the local church where he was. And in that particular town, it was a very small chapel, and there wasn't going to be enough room in the chapel for all the folks in that town who could come. And so Francis came up with the idea of having the Christmas Eve celebration outside. Now, Francis wasn't a priest. Francis was a deacon, and so he had this particular call to care and reach beyond to those beyond. And so he was inviting people. And what he did was he went outside, and he found a cave. And the story is that in this cave, he brought a manger in. You know, we think of a manger as, today we think of manger as a crib. But a manger was something animals ate out of. It's where the hay was. It's where the food was. And so he brought one of those mangers into this cave. He brought some animals into this cave. And he put together what we now know as this manger scene. Yes, he took Matthew's gospel and he took Luke's gospel, or much different. There's two different stories about the birth of Jesus. No need to get into that tonight. But it wasn't important to Francis. For Francis, this Christ was born in our midst, and he wanted to sort of paint a picture. These were folks who were poor, people who had no power, some perhaps oppressed in their lives. They couldn't read. They couldn't write. There were no Bibles. There were no books. It was 1223. And so to paint a picture, to give people a sense of the poverty that Jesus was born into, he put together this manger scene so people could see and visualize that Jesus too was born in poverty. Jesus was born in the midst of those who had no power. And yet this Jesus calls us to such an incredible life, this goodness, this God who loves us. This God who calls us to stand for justice, to reach out to each other, to care for each other, to love one another, as this God loves us. And so as we gather together tonight, look at your manger scene when you go home and really dwell on it and see the richness of where that came from in Francis's life. And around 1223, it's become such a powerful symbol to us of the possibilities of our lives. And know as we gather together on this Christmas Eve that God loves you. God loves this creation. God called it good. He called us very good. And there is nothing that we need to do to make God love us more. And there's nothing we can do that's ever going to make God love us less. And we live in that grace. And we celebrate that this evening as we celebrate our redemption, this Christ coming into this world, this incarnation of Christ, which you may also want to know is a very much a big part of the Eastern Orthodox tradition and is very much our Anglican tradition. In the Anglican tradition, we emphasize the incarnation, the enfleshment of God in this world, and we celebrate that, and we call it good. So let us go forth into this good creation and call it forth and care for each other, change this world, and face injustice where there is, and be willing to suffer to change it. Merry Christmas.